Okay, so here we are once again. And I earlier mentioned that on this podcast I'd be talking about how to be a more effective person when seeking consultation and/or therapy. But because of some folks who asked for me to do a podcast on holiday-related stress, excuse me. And/or depression, I thought this would be a good time for me to do this. So, the topic today is going to be on dealing with holiday-related stress and depression. So, the first part of this, I'm going to be talking about depression with youth that are related to holiday events. And then I'm going to talk about stress in general that other folks might be feeling for a variety of reasons. Generally speaking, most people consider the holidays a time for exchanging gifts and family togetherness and fond remembering of past times and bringing friendships more rekindling together and that sort of thing, and positive self-affirmation, to reflect on what has been, what is, and what might be. There's a very large portion of the population, both youth and adult, for which this is not a pleasant time, but it's actually a painful time, oftentimes filled with anxiety and despair and hopelessness, sadness or anger over current scenarios based on past things, because the holidays end up being sort of this post-traumatic-esque reminder of things, particularly if a bad incident happened close to or on the holidays. Sometimes it's a time for reflecting of guilt or any kind of self-deprecation or whatever, and so instead of folks feeling good about it, it's a time for remembering bad stuff and bringing up all sorts of unresolved feelings, which of course lead both adolescents and adults to do all sorts of self-defeating things, particularly, for example, if they're a person trying to remain sober or remain clean or to keep their addictive slash substance abusing tendencies to a minimum. This can be very, very difficult. Plus, you go to parties and it's sort of the norm of our society to have fun, quote unquote, that's equated with drinking. So there are certain factors with youth in particular that can trigger more painful times during this holiday season. And typically that includes youth who are living currently or who have come from some sort of bad family situation, whether it's emotional abuse or physical or sexual abuse, families that have a lot of substance abuse or addiction, or maybe have a primary parent or parents or guardian suffering from some sort of psychological distress. For youth who already have emotional difficulties, such as low self-esteem or depression or whatever, that's obviously going to, this is going to be worse for them. If they have some sort of physical disabilities, particularly those that are chronic, severe learning problems, or any kind of really types of severe physical or emotional problems, this is going to be harder for them. If folks have recently lost a significant friend or relative or lover or family member, either through divorce or parental separation, or in some cases abandonment or death, this becomes really, really, really stressful for folks. Or if they're in the middle of a family crisis, so it's an adult, for example, who just got laid off work, or is having severe financial crisis, or just going through, or having just gone through a divorce or a death or a separation, or an adolescent or a young person going through some sort of abandonment or chronic illness of a close family member, and they're afraid that the family member may not recover. Or if the person himself or herself is in some major, whatever call life or developmental type crisis, so you've got a young adult or an adolescent with failing grades or just losing a job that they were using to supplement income while going to school, or flunking out of school, or maybe having just gotten rejected by a peer group, or maybe have just had to run away from home due to, a variety of situations, breaking up with a long-time, dating partner, any of that kind of stuff. Or if you have a youth or an adult with a history of prior severe depression with suicidal attempts and/or suicidal gestures. And obviously, sort of the rule of thumb here is sort of the same as it was when I talked about the suicidality podcast a couple of podcasts ago. You know, generally, if you have a person who has a history of suicide attempts, the greater the lethality of the attempts in the past, and the increased number of previous attempts in the past, especially if you have a family history of this sort of thing, greater they are at risk for future suicide attempts. And the holiday bringing up a bunch of unresolved issues just makes this worse. If you have people who are in a very economically disadvantaged situation, particularly if they don't have any expectations for, you know, relief or improvement anywhere in the near future, and for those who have, both adults and adolescents, who have fewer or no social supports, persons upon whom they can rely, or some sort of confidant or partner or best friend or whatever with whom they can share painful feelings and experiences. So, you know, while most people are able to, you know, to spot depression in folks, you know, because most of the depressions, particularly the more typical, quote-unquote, vegetative depression, have, you know, the real classic signs that most people are familiar with, the loss of pleasure of previously enjoyed activities, having no energy, no motivation, decreased eating habits or sleeping problems or social withdrawal or that sort of thing. Sometimes, with children and adolescents in particular, they tend to display behaviors and emotions that are not necessarily correlated in the public's mind, the lay public's mind, as being part of a depressive-like state. So these might be such things as engaging in some excessive other activity, which is sort of a way to divert their or distract themselves from feeling really, really bad. Or they may do a lot of anger outburst or some kind of acting out behaviors, which could, you know, include sexual acting out, could include substance use or abuse, could be, you know, punching holes in walls, you know, whatever, yelling and screaming, just being sort of a grumpy and in a bad mood. And these actually may be signs of depression as opposed to something else that, you know, somehow the holiday sort of triggered. So environmental cues of the holiday, things like wreaths on doors, decorative lighting in retail stores and homes, you know, Christmas trees, you know, menorah, anything, you know, advertisements on the radio or TV about sales and, you know, Christmas or holiday-oriented music, whether it's, you know, for Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or whatever, social gatherings that have this festive theme about it, all of which are intended to kind of psych people up in a positive way, can really be sources of discomfort for folks who are suffering during this time period, particularly for youth. And these things are almost impossible to avoid. I mean, you know, unless you're a recluse in a cave with no electronic access, these things are pretty hard to avoid. And sometimes these things can essentially feel like a re-traumatization and be sort of cues for how alone this person is or how much they remember the loss that happened near this time last year, or, you know, not getting presents for the holidays last year because their parent died or their, you know, whatever their situation was, they were living in a group home, whatever. So this is really very, very painful for these folks, particularly when they look around themselves and see most of the other folks having a great time, and they're like, well, what the hell's wrong? You know, I'm sitting here miserable, and these other people are happy. So if you encounter these sorts of youth, whether you're a parent or a spiritual leader or a dating partner or a significant other or a close friend, start to take notice of this kind of thing. And while I certainly don't, you know, advocate folks sort of overdiagnose what's going on, so to speak, you know, sort of be sensitive to these kind of things if you have this kind of thing going on. And if you see these sorts of things going on, certainly what I would say is, you know, try to be non-judgmental about them. Look for the cues and see if you can, you know, somehow pick up on them and kind of, you know, in a sort of gentle, caring sort of way, say, hey, you know, you don't seem to be yourself, or hey, I know this, that you seem to be distracted. What's going on? You know, try to be careful. Try to look at them in a very uncritical, non-judgmental, sort of caring approach method. Try to listen to what the person you're talking with, whether that person be your son, daughter, boyfriend, girlfriend, cousin, nephew, student, teammate, whatever, and see, look at the physical mannerisms, the facial expressions, the tone of voice that the person uses to deliver the message. Be very aware of those sort of things, because those kind of subtle cues, and in some cases not so subtle cues, often convey messages that this person's in distress. And they may not be saying, oh my God, you know, this is horrible and I'm in so much pain I can't hardly stand it, you know, Lee. But it's kind of the way that they look, the way they carry themselves. Pay attention to that and approach them in a sort of a friendly, caring sort of, hey, I'm concerned about you way, and see if you can get them to talk about it and kind of share with you and try to just be as supportive as you can. You know, you may not be in a position to fix the problem, but you may be in a position to help make the problem less significant. And if these folks just know they have somebody that gives a flip, who's, you know, noticing enough to care about them, you know, who gets an email, you know, or if it's a long distance friend and you suspect something different, you know, you're IMing with them and you suspect something's different on the IM, you know, chat with them about it. Ask them what's going on, you know. If you can get them on the phone, talk with them a little bit. See if you can get them to open up and just kind of like, you know, for lack of a better term, as I like to call it, barf it out. You know, just let them throw up all over the table what's going on, not literally, obviously. What's going on with them, and see what you can do to try to help, you know, make sense of this. You know, obviously, if you feel the person's really, 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 really bad off, you know, you might want to encourage them to seek, you know, guidance if they're an adolescent or a child, to seek guidance of a parent or trusted authority figure or adult, or perhaps, you know, if they're in counseling, suggest that they talk to their, you know, counselor or therapist or whatever about it, or their pastor or rabbi or whatever. You know, but at some point you're going to have to be caring enough to notice these things. And a lot of times, sometimes that alone sends a message that maybe they're not as isolated as they think. Because one of the things that happens when people get in these sort of depresso mindsets is they can't see outside of their little hole, so to speak. They can't see outside of the dark hole of depression. So everything becomes a sort of tunnel vision sort of you know, inescapable void that they can't see out of. You know, Aaron Beck, a very famous cognitive psychology person, talks about, you know, the negative triads of depression, where they feel helpless and hopeless about self, others, and their current situation, the world around them, their present, their past, their future. You know, and we already know that biochemically, particularly if somebody's been struggling with depression for a long time, you know, their brain sort of goes in what I call, you know, survival mode. So they stop being able to see alternatives, thinking outside the box. The biochemistry of the brain actually changes, and they just sort of see what's immediately in front of them because they're in survival mode. They're not looking at creative solution mode. They're looking at survival mode. And sometimes what you think is like, oh my God, I can't believe you did. You know, you don't say this obviously, but you might be thinking this to yourself. Holy moly! You know, are you kidding? You mean you didn't think you could do X, Y, Z instead of just, you know, offing yourself or drinking another, you know, gallon of tequila, you know, just tequila of the time? Ba-doom. Yeah, I know. My jokes suck. What can I tell you? You know, I've warned you guys before about this, right? But seriously, you know, I make a little light of it. But, you know, really, you need to really hone in on what's going on and really talk to them and see if you can get them to open up and share with stuff. And you don't necessarily have to be there to fix anything. Sometimes just being there, just allowing them to talk and you know, kind of regurgitate all the crap that's going on, and you just sort of empathetically listening and shaking your head and going, gee, I'm really sorry, or yeah, I hear that's hard for you, or some sort of reflection that tells them that somebody else gives a flip, right? And if you're really concerned about them, you know, encourage them to talk to somebody about it, whether it's, as I said, a trusted adult, another friend, whatever, and always be open to listen if they need to talk. And sometimes folks, you know, need to rehash this 4, 5, or 6, you know, 1,000 times. One time doesn't necessarily do it, you know, that's what she said. Ba-doom. So, sorry, I really shouldn't joke about this. Really, you know, some of these folks are going to need to do this multiple times. Because sometimes folks are testing the water and they're like, okay, I want to see if this person's really going to be there. So I'm feeling bad. Let me barf all this out on them again. They're not doing this consciously. It's sort of this unconscious dilly in their head going, okay, so let's really see if somebody really gives a flip, okay? Certainly, if you suspect the person's seriously suicidal or otherwise self-destructive, you definitely ought to seriously consider them talking to a trusted adult if they're an adolescent, or, you know, their pastor or rabbi or coach or, you know, whatever, teacher. And, you know, failing that, if you're really, really, really worried about them, you know, and they're your buddy and it's an adolescent person, go to their parents and say, I'm really concerned about Johnny or Susie or whatever. You're really being more of a friend by going to a parent or trusted adult saying, you know, I'm really concerned about this situation, than it is to keep silent and then read about your friend in the newspaper the next day. Not a great idea, right? Certainly if they're uber serious or if you know they have comorbid type of mental disorders going on, anxiety disorders, depression already, you know, trauma, whatever, encourage them, if they're not already in counseling, encourage them to get some kind of assistance, right? Don't drown them, don't drown themselves in some sort of, you know, beer-infused or, you know, vodka-infused stupor or Valium-infused or, you know, Xanax-infused stupor, because it's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. And as, of course, most of you probably know, and I think I've even said this before in a previous podcast, but, you know, it probably bears repeating here. Most people who have depression of one kind or another, if they're going to medicate the depression away inappropriately, they're going to usually go for alcohol. And as most of you who are listening to this podcast know, alcohol is a central nervous system, a CNS depressant, which means it makes you more depressed, right? And yet it's the typical drug of choice for most depressed and dysthymic disordered people. So it's like, hello, you're doing the very drug that's going to make you more depressed. And even though it's kind of knocking you out, you know, in the short run and putting you to sleep if you drink enough or whatever, it's really only making it a whole lot worse in the long run for you. So if you see somebody doing this kind of stuff, you really, really need to encourage them to get help and not make their situation worse, right? If there's somebody alone, you know, it's a single person that's just got out of a divorce, or somebody just lost their parents or whatever, and you can provide some sort of holiday setting for them, invite them for dinner at your house or whatever, you know, by all means, if you can be a buddy for them, you know, do it. You know, it is really one of the kindest things you can do to somebody in need during this holiday time period. You know, giving gifts and all is fun and nice, and but just being with other folks in a social setting sometimes is really, really, really important to know that they have somebody who gives a flip about them. And I think that can be incredibly curative for folks. Okay. So I want to kind of move off that for a second and talk about in general sort of this general stress that folks have, whether it's, you know, because of traffic, and any of you who know who live in a big metropolitan city, whether it's, you know, Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, LA, you know, San Francisco, New York, you know, or Washington, D.C. or whatever, you know, traffic is bad enough, and the holidays, it's just, oh my freaking God, abysmal, right? Shopping lines are usually out the wazoo. You know, people are running in and they're not very nice to each other. Or they're trying to grab for the latest and greatest incarnation of the video game or, you know, or, whatever it is they're looking for. And, you know, folks can be sort of kind of like territorial animals going after meat that's in short supply. You know, it's also pretty stressful if you've got somebody in military services away from home, you know, in a foreign country, whether they're someone who's in this country that's a foreigner, you know, here, which makes it even worse, you know, like an exchange student, for example, you know, who's here and can't afford to go home for the holidays, you know, or somebody in another country or state or whatever. I mean, it could be pretty stressful, you know, and with divorce and remarriage, and now you have this blended family phenomena, what I call the Brady Bunch scenario, although, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. This becomes really challenging because now it's like, okay, so who are the kids going to spend, you know, this evening with, and who are they going to spend the day with, and, you know, do I get them during Thanksgiving, somebody else gets them during Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever, somebody else gets them during New Year's or, you know, whatever, or, you know, solstice or whatever, you know. It just becomes a nightmare. And of course, kids often get, you know, caught in the middle of this, and it's stressful for parents as well. You know, you're remarried and, you know, you have kids with one wife and the other wife's divorced and maybe remarried or in another state. And what are you going to do about getting the kids to see, you know, parents? And just, it's just bad. You know, you have overcrowding in the stores, the malls, you know, the clerks are rushed and overworked, even the banks, you know, going to the bank to make a deposit or whatever, you know, look for creative ways to do things that you would ordinarily do, because otherwise it's going to, you know, it's going to get really ugly. Now, this is kind of late for me to be saying, but one of the things I always tell people to do, you know, who I'm working with that are, you know, even as the end of the summer is coming and, you know, I know that, you know, all these major holidays, they usually start around Thanksgiving. you know, is several months away. I tell people, you know, make a list of potential gifts and get them now. Shop early, you know, and even though it's almost Thanksgiving, and I know that, you know, the so-called Black Friday is like, oh my God, the busiest day on the planet. I've actually, by the way, for those of you who are listening to this podcast, I've actually never shopped ever on a Black Friday ever until last year. And I had to go out to get a cooking tool because of some pie or cake. I can't remember what it was. I think it was a ring to make a cheesecake. It was my first cheesecake I'd ever made from scratch. And I was going out to get a, you know, cheesecake ring. And I was going out on Friday, and I was talking to a buddy of mine on the phone before leaving. And he goes, are you actually going to go out and shop today? And I'm like, what? You know, Mr. Dumbass me. And he goes, dude, it's Black Friday. I'm like, what do you mean? The sun's shining. You know, Mr. Literal Boy here. Anyway, you know, he's like, hello, this is like the busiest shopping day on the planet. I know you don't live in a cave. You got to know this shit. And I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that. Totally right. So I'm thinking, oh my Lord. Well, it just so happened that the shop I was going to was not in like one of the major malls. It was this little small shop out of the way. So I got there. I didn't have to go to any mall. I got to the shop. It was practically unpersoned. There was almost nobody in the shop. I went in and I bought my cheesecake ring, and I went, thank you, Jesus, Buddha, Satan, Allah, God, whatever, you know, got my ring, got in my car, and went home. Do not pass go, do not collect $200, and so that's my one shocking experience on Black Friday. So I really sort of, you know, I bypassed the bullet, so to speak, on that one. But I tell most people who are not that lucky and who don't need sort of esoteric items, that doesn't, because most people are going to go to the mall or some even strip mall or some shopping place where they're going to be inundated with folks. Shop early, right? If you're waiting for sales, sales happen all the time during the year. Trust me, because I'm, you know, one of the biggest chagunya on the planet. Oh, sorry, that's Greek. Yeah, no, that's Greek to you, right? But it basically means a cheapskate in Greek. There's no really good literal translation for chagunya. It's it's not a very flattering term, but it's absolutely what I am. I'm like the cheapskate from hell, you know, which is one reason I can afford having all these babies that I have, all these collector instruments that I have, because I don't pay anywhere close to what they're really value is, because A, I'm not rich, and B, I wouldn't spend it if I had, because I'm cheap. And if you know me, that's like the understatement of the day. So I'm looking for sales all the time everywhere, whether it's, you know, food in a grocery store, and I'm serious, you know, because I cook a lot of organic stuff and whole food stuff, and that stuff's expensive, as any of you know, who shop and cook, do your own cooking and who want to shop healthy and organic. So I always wait till they go on sale to stuff, and they have them pretty regularly. So I'm looking for sales, whether it's for clothes or guitars or gifts for folks or whatever. And, you know, I tell people, look for store specials that run throughout the year and buy them. Think ahead. Make Christmas lists and Hanukkah lists and Yule lists and, you know, birthday lists or whatever, your Thanksgiving, Halloween, whatever the heck it is, New Year's, whatever. Buy early. Think early and shop 6 months to a year in advance. And I'm not joking. I do that. You know, as long as the item is non-perishable, I do that, right? With the advent of the internet and so many shopping, you know, mail order stuff through the online stuff, look at these websites and mail order services and online shopping stuff. You know, this is like a hugely easy, no-brainer way. You know, it comes right to your door, and it's a no-brainer. You know, you pay for it, and you're done. Okay, you get online, you order it, you get on the phone, you order it, you're done. And most of your major retailers even have this now on the line. You know, and even a lot of esoteric folks have this kind of stuff. You know, if you're going to shop in a conventional manner, you know, taking actual physical, what I call real-time shopping, you know, like a lot of us old farts like myself do, and particularly if you're going to do it during this time, but do it during the middle of the week, right? If you can, do it during lunch hours, right? If you live close, right? If you don't live close, don't try to rush a lunch hour if you only have 30 or 45 minutes in, because a lot of people are going to be doing this for lunch hours. They're going to have some of the same idea. And don't try to do it after normal working hours unless you have a weird schedule like I do. That's one advantage of my circadian rhythm sleep disorder is I'm not in most traffic either going or coming back to or from work, right? So I typically shop during weird hours. And a lot of the stores have extended hours during this holiday time. So shop at a weird time, right, which you don't think a lot of people are going to be there. And do it during the week, right? Most people are not shopping during the week. They're shopping on the weekend, right? If you can't make it and you got a relative or a friend or a buddy who's off that day, give them a list, be very specific about what you give them, hand them the money, and ask them to please get it for you, right? If you're an adult who's taking a kid with you, particularly a younger kid, make sure that your time is very limited because young children typically don't have the greatest patience for this kind of stuff, and you can't really blame them, right? So make sure that your time is very limited so that you don't have a screaming, yelling kid, you know, doing all kinds of crazy stuff while you're out trying to shop during this otherwise already stressful kind of thing. And if you're taking a kid, take some toys or, you know, squeezies or healthy snacks to distract the kid with. If you think you're going to be out for a while, and I would say take them anyway because you know you may get shocked, and 14 trillion other people might have had the same idea on the same day at the same shop you did, and given the time of year, you know, you might take longer than you want. If you can, and it's not a big hassle, and you want to try to avoid the traffic, because as most of you know, the traffic is horrible anyway. It gets 30 times worse during this time of year. Take public transportation if you can, right? Most people aren't going to be doing that particularly. Now, the downside of that is you can't do a boatload of shopping and, you know, carry half of, Saks Fifth Avenue in your hands if you're riding a bus or a train or whatever. But if you're just making little outlets to get, you know, small stuff, it's not a big deal. If for some reason you have to be out and you just don't have any choice and you're going to have to be out and shopping and traffic during peak times of the holiday cacophony, right? Just know you're going to have waits. It's likely going to be frustrating. The traffic's likely going to be really bad. You're going to have long lines. You're going to have people who are not that competent waiting on you in some cases or not that polite. You know, you may have to go to four or five different stores to find the thing because they've sold out or whatever. So just psych yourself up before then. You know, don't put your samurai warrior suit on. Put your Zen Buddha Om suit on and just kind of chill out, accept the fact that it's going to be an adventure, and give yourself a whole lot of extra time, right? I would say 2 to 3 times what you think it's going to take you. Give yourself a lot of extra time, right? And remember, try not to overschedule yourself on those activities with other days, other activities on those days, right? Try to minimize your intake of stimulants like coffee and tea and anything with amphetamines in it. You know, do a lot of if you do meditation or self hypnosis, do your deep breathing before you go there. You may want to practice it while you're walking around in the mall and people bumping into you and stuff. You know, make sure that you've got plenty of time. You give yourself, because all this extra time and kind of psyching up, because it's better if you use it and you got it and you don't need it and you come home happy than if you go out going, oh my freaking God, I was ready to explode a hydrogen bomb out there, okay? In terms of finances, most people tend to spend more money than they budgeted on during the holidays. They get excited, they see these things and go, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of, oh my Lord, look at that. Oh God, I've always wanted to get one of those for Johnny, or hey, I wanted one of those for myself. I'm going to wrap it up and give it to myself. And I give myself presents, right? So what I tell people is start budgeting early. Be realistic before you get into the holiday excitement and the holiday craze and, you know, the extra adrenaline of, ooh, yeah, you know, all the spending and woohoo and all these, you know, advertisements, because that's what, you know, that's what these guys and gals are out there to do. They're out there to advertise to get your money. So make sure that you have your expenditures well budgeted out in advance and hold to your budget, right? Get a ballpark idea prior to even leaving your house. Take the extra hour or two, figure out what you can spend, who you got to buy presents for, what you want to spend gift-wise for yourself or other people, whatever, right? And what I'd say is if you want a ballpark, figure out what you did last year and add 10 to 20%, depending on inflation and the, you know, the area of the country and whether you live in a big city or a small town or whatever. You know, if you're budgeting for this, and I tell people start budgeting for this early, right? Now, it's a little late for that, hearing this, you know, like, well, dude, where were you 6 months ago with this freaking podcast, right? Okay, you know, sue me, okay? but maybe next year, okay? You can start holding out a little small extra money from each paycheck, right? So at the end of the year, you got some extra money to blow if you see something really exciting or thing goes, product goes up higher than you thought, and you're like, oh, my God, you know? So, but stick to your budget as much as you can. Don't overspend. So many people do that, and then they have buyer's remorse after the first of the year, and they're sweating how they're going to pay their taxes and pay their mortgage and feed their families. You know, don't be doing that. Don't be stupid. Budget yourself. And even if you're waiting this late in the game to do it, you know, get a realistic estimate of what you can really afford to spend, and don't go over it. Try to spend under it. Just be frugal. Right. If you're going out, particularly if you're going out and taking kids with you, take friends with you. Right. Spread the pain of your children with other friends. Oops, did I say that? But seriously, take friends. Take some friends of your kids if your kids are old enough to do that. You know, it'll help them pass the time. Take some friends for you to pass the time with. Right. If you've got friends who have kids and you have kids, go out with friends with other kids. That's a really good idea. Probably don't want to take somebody with you that doesn't have kids, because most people who don't have kids, like myself, don't really enjoy being around a bunch of little kids screaming and yelling and having a shit fit in, you know, out in the malls and stuff. I can tell you that I find that very annoying. So be kind to your other friends. If you're going to take friends with you and you have kids, take friends with kids and let them bring their kids along, or at least say, hey, I'm planning to bring Susie or Johnny or whatever with me. Are you okay with that? Right? So be smart. If you're married and you're trying to pick which in-law family to have the holidays with, that can obviously be stressful. Again, the key to this is planning in advance. Sit down with your spouse or live-in partner or whatever now. Talk, if you guys have and gals have in-law family types, you know, if you're close with your families and whatever, spend it out. Compromise is the name of the game here, right? So communication and compromise, the two C's. So if you're living with someone or you're dating somebody seriously, you're in a relationship with them, you're married, whatever, these things are going to happen, right? Every in-law wants to see their kid, respective kid or grandkid or whatever during the holiday season. Plan it out. Figure out how you're going to balance it. Do what, you know, talk with your partner about it. Maybe get your partner to talk to his or her family of origin, and you talk with your family of origin and talk about logistics, particularly if the families don't live in the same area. And if all of you guys and gals are in the same, you know, 20, 30, 50, 100 miles within, you know, of each other, that's a much less an issue. But, you know, with today's mobile population, folks are often across the country or in different countries, you know, or three or four states away or whatever. That's a real issue, right? Talk about how it's going to do. Do frequent phone check-ins with people. Talk about what they're comfortable with. You know, that's obviously, if you're going to travel, that's going to be another financial burden. So again, this is why it's important to plan this stuff early, right? Talk with the family. See who can come to you, right? Do you have enough room to get in-laws to come in to do kind of stuff, right? If you're in the military and you're too far away, you can't have time to come, see what you can do in terms of video conferencing or phone liaisons. Use Skype or some other, you know, internet platform to do, you know, talkies with and do lots of phone stuff and hello and videos and, you know, anything you can do to try to, you know, breach that geographic gap, because, you know, sometimes it's just not feasible to do that, you know. So if you're on the more serious end of the spectrum, so, you know, you've had loss, you've had all kinds of emotional problems, you've just experienced a separation, a divorce, death of a loved one, be aware that these feelings can really impact you badly, right? If you just lost custody of a kid, or if your kid's not coming to see you during the holiday or whatever, right? Or if you're on the outs with your former husband, lover, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, right? This can be really, really stressful. Whatever you do with each other, please remember, do not sandwich your kids like so much lettuce and luncheon meat in between the two ends of the sandwich bread fighting, okay? With multiple offspring, it gets sometimes even, you know, nastier. With remarriage and, you know, geographic separation, again, you know, talk this thing out way in advance. If you're not on talking mood, you know, do emails, do something. You know, better to do it in person and all, but I know that that's not practical in some cases. Just remember, whatever you're doing it for the kids. This is not about you. This is about your kids, if you have kids between you, right? Make this easy on your kids. This really is not between you. And if you're feeling antagonistic towards your ex, you know, remember, if you you know, get into a pissing contest with them or a screaming match or whatever, the people that are really going to suffer are the kids. They're just, it's going to be really, really bad. And you don't want them to associate the holidays with family fights and, you know, screaming, yelling matches and custody battles. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that in my practice and even with friends of mine. I mean, it just, it's so freaking sad, right? It is just, and it's completely unnecessary and avoidable, right? In some cases, if you can't figure it out, hire somebody like me to negotiate it, right? Go to a counselor, go to a marital counselor, go to an arbitrator, go to anybody, some, you know, non-biased third-party person, right? If you guys, you know, aren't, if you're in therapy, pick out a third person. Don't, you know, because if you're in therapy with somebody and you say, well, I want to use my therapist because I trust my therapist, and your other person in the situation has his or her therapist or doesn't have a therapist and says, well, hell, your therapist is going to agree with you because, you know, and while that's usually not the case because most of us are pretty unbiased about stuff, get a recommendation of a third-party person that doesn't know either of you and just hire them for one or two times to sit down and say, look, here's our situation. Help us out here, okay? If you're dealing with the loss of somebody that you really loved and you're a survivor and you're in the holidays and this is bringing up really the idea of loss, you know, this empty space at the dinner table, or particularly if this person died in or close to a holiday, either immediately or even, you know, as long as 5 or 6 or 10 years away, sometimes, you know, it's difficult. And what I tell people is, here's some basic rules and guidelines to follow. Just accept the fact that this is going to be tough, and it's okay, right? It's never fun to not be with somebody, whether it's a kid you lost through divorce or death or whatever, or a spouse or your best buddy or whatever. It's never easy. It's not supposed to be easy, right? It's that nasty, and here we go again, it's that nasty four-letter word, work, okay? And so you're not always going to be in the greatest of holiday spirits, so to speak, at that time. It's okay, right? Grief and mourning are normal states. And while you look in the DSM and it basically says, you know, well, you know, normal grief, pathological grief is anything that lasts longer than 2 years, I can tell you that if you've been with somebody for 20 or 30 years, you're probably not going to be over them in a two-year period. And if you do, then you're either the greatest denier on the planet or you have amazingly good coping skills. And if you have amazingly good coping skills, woohoo for you. My hat's off to you. I respect and think that's awesome. But, you know, if you're like the rest of us schmucks, this is going to be a while. Just accept that it's going to be hard, particularly the first couple of holiday things that come up. And that's true for birthdays, anniversary events, not just during the, you know, the Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever season. So just be aware that your stress level, your mourning level, your emotions are going to be up. And if you need help from somebody like me, give us a call, right? Reach out to your spiritual leaders. Reach out to friends and family, other family members, right? This is going to be hard. If you have a support group in your area that deals with, you know, grief and loss of loved ones around, you know, go to those meetings, even if it's only during the holiday time, right? Don't suffer needlessly. I mean, you're going to suffer a little bit. I mean, it's just, it's inevitable. It's part of the process. Grief and mourning are part of the freaking process. They're healthy. You can't put a lid on it and act like it's not happening. Don't try to cover it up by smiling and acting like you're okay. Don't cover it up by doing drugs. That's only going to make it worse in the long run for you, okay? And for God's sake, don't do something stupid, okay? So go reach for help if you need it. Pace yourself and accept that it's going to be hard, particularly the first couple of times. As I said earlier, get as much social support as you possibly can, whether that's in your immediate community, your church, your synagogue, your temple, family members, friends, buddies, band members, teammates, whatever. You know, reach out to these folks. It is not weakness to ask for help. In fact, I would argue that it's strength to ask for help. I tell the same people the same message when they come into my office and they're really hurting, or, you know, and they start crying and then they feel all guilty and ashamed. You know what? Crying is not a sense of weakness. It's not a sign of weakness. I would argue that crying, particularly in front of somebody, is a sign of strength and power, because that really takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of intestinal fortitude to be able to share and open your feelings with another person in that very, 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 very meaningful, deep way. And I take that as a sign of strength. That is not a sign of weakness. Anybody who tells you it is, they're full of sheep dip. And I really, when somebody does that with me, and it's genuine, it's not a manipulation tool. We all know people who do that. You know, they're drama kings and drama queens, and you know, they're histrionic as hell and they cry, or they're manipulative as hell and they do it for manipulation. But this is a general expression of sadness, frustration, self, you know, recrimination, guilt, whatever. And somebody's being real in the therapy session with me, or being real as a friend coming to me, and they're upset. And you know what? I applaud that. I think they're just strong as hell. And honestly, I consider it an honor for somebody to do that with me, because what that says is they trust me enough not to make fun of them, not to minimize them, not to ridicule them, and not to think less of them. That says so much about the relationship that it's not even funny. And I'd be willing to bet dollars to donuts that anybody who means a flip to you, or you mean a flip to them, they're going to consider that. That's going to strengthen the relationship. That is not going to damage the relationship. It is going to strengthen it. It's going to cement it more. You're going to feel better. It'll be like a catharsis, like a purging. They're going to feel trusted and valued as a friend or whatever. It's going to be a win-win situation. I mean, I cannot say that enough times. It is so powerful to do that, whether it's with a therapist or with a pastor or a friend or a family member. That's a bonding experience, honest to God, right? As I mentioned earlier, avoid excessive substance consumption during this time, particularly if you have an already pre-existing emotional condition, psychological condition, or whatever. And even if you don't, you know, if you've just lost somebody close to you or you're still in grieving, you're going to be slightly depressed, you're going to be anxious, you're going to be stressed. I mean, come on, that's normal. Don't try to mask it with artificial substances, whether it's cheesecake or amaretto or amaretto cheesecake or, you know, cocaine or whatever. Don't mask it. You know, I tell people the sooner you can try to work on it, you know, gauge yourself. Don't try to do it all in one day or one month or, you know, 3 weeks or whatever, or even a year in some cases. Pace yourself, but don't avoid the work. And don't substitute the work with something else, whether it's sex or rock and roll or buying sprees or food or drugs or whatever. You know, facing it is hard, but it's claiming your power back. It's doing the work to get your power back. You guys have heard me say that time and time and time again, and you're going to hear it another 300,000 times before this thing is over. Right? The other thing I tell people is plan your days and your nights so that you don't have too much alone time or downtime. Now, usually people going through this need some degree, and all of us do from time to time, whether we're grieving or not, and some folks more than others, need alone time. They just need time where they need to chill and be by themselves and be happy with themselves, and that's cool. When you're in this position, you're going to need some of that too, but don't use it as an escape avoidance tool. Don't, you know, plan your time out so that you don't have too much time on your hands. You know, you're not like the Styx song, too much time on your hands, right? You don't want to be doing that, right? And if you have downtime, do downtime constructively. You know, work out, journal, meditate, you know, try new recipes, read, take online courses, you know, rent movies that you really like, watch movies, listen to music that's really cool, take a bubble bath, meditate. I don't, you know, stand on your head, I don't care. Do anything that's positive that's going to get you someplace constructive during this time period. But try not to get too much downtime during this time, because it's going to be harder. Because most people, when they have too much downtime, they start to ruminate, they start to go over stuff in their head like a broken record. And trust me, Mr. OCPD over here doing this podcast knows this syndrome incredibly well. A whole lot better than I wish I did, but you know, sometimes you just got to suck it up and deal with it. And that's certainly been my case in the past and continues to be my challenge. Okay? So one thing I have to do is make sure that I don't have too much time to ruminate. When I catch myself ruminating, I force myself to do something else to get myself out of the stuff. And you guys have to, and gals have to do the same thing. If you find yourself wallowing too much, get out the pigsty and get to take a bath and go out and do something. I don't care what it is. But as long as it's helpful and constructive and isn't going to get you further down the tunnel of darkness, do something to bring some light into your life, right? Volunteer a charity, go to the food bank. I mean, I don't care what you do, you know, but do something. Volunteer at a hospital, you know, put on a clown suit and go visit a children's hospital. Do something, right? But get out. Be with some other people. Everybody needs a little bit of that, some people more than others. So I hope that was helpful for folks. The key to this is planning, preparation, and not doing too many negative things are going to bite you in the butt later. Okay. So thanks for listening. I hope that was helpful for folks. And so the next time we get together, my podcast is going to be what to do once you find a therapist you like or a counselor you like, and what you can do to maximize your time with that counselor so that, A, you're not as big of a pain in the patooties as you might be, but even more importantly, because that's really what they're getting paid for, let's be honest, is for you to be a pain in the patootie, but so you can maximize your time with them so that you can spend, you know, as little time as you need with them, enough time to get what you want out of them, obviously, what you need out of them, but not overly amount of time, and make the most constructive use of the time that you have with them, right? And I tell most of my folks, I become the best therapist on the planet when I can make myself as obsolete as possible, as quickly as possible, without abandoning you before the work's done, right? And when that's happened, I've done my job really, really well. And, you know, the good news about my job is I'm never going to be out of work. The bad news about my job is I'm never going to be out of work. But, you know, you do what you can, and you get people on the road and get them healthy as soon as you can and get them out practicing the lessons you teach them. Have a great time. Have a great holiday. I hope everybody is, like, uber cool. And if you're not, find a way to make yourself uber cool. And take care of yourself always. Check you on the next podcast. And thanks always for listening. Talk to you soon.